and terms. I can just maybe quote one or two. Any cinematographic or audiovisual work co-produced under this agreement shall be considered to be national cinematographic or audiovisual works in the territories of both parties in accordance with the legislative and statutory provision enforced in the state of the parties. This is what just one condition that anybody who wants to enter in this agreement will have to be aware of these terms and conditions. As I said, there are 12 of them. And to be admissible under this agreement, cinematographic or audiovisual work must be co-produced by producers of both sides. And that's very important because it's a co-production treaty, which means the two producers or the two entities in South Africa or the two film, whoever comes from the South African film industry and the French industry has to agree to work together to produce the film. It does not work if one person wants to produce a film, for example. It doesn't work. It has always has to be two entities that work on this. The competent authorities of the party shall consult and provide each other with any information related to the granting, rejection, modification, or withdrawal of co-production status. In cases there are disputes, we will then have a way in terms of how we handle them. But obviously, we will notify the other authorities and, by way of a non-verbal, and the government will then play a very significant in that regard. And the reason for these webinars that I've spoken about is to go through these terms and conditions so that everybody then is aware of the terms that are attached if anyone wants to enter into this co-production treaties. There are 12 conditions there. I didn't go through all of them, but they are there for every person to go through, and particularly those who want to do co-production. Article number four, it deals with the requirement for producers. It outlines the required competencies, requirement, and acceptable condition of the beneficiaries of the agreement, citizenship and nationality. So it will define what is a national or a permanent resident, a South African citizen or a permanent resident of the Republic of South Africa, those people who were probably not born in South Africa, but they became permanent citizenship. So they will then be accommodated under this treaty. It also has a number of conditions in terms of the requirement for producers. Producers are the people who are going to raise funds, hire actors, pay the location where the movies is going to be shot. These are the people who are going to manage the script. The script is not necessarily written by the producer, but the producer is the one who oversee the entire production of the movie from the beginning to an end. And he's the one who's going to be giving out contracts of everybody from the script writer to the one who's catering during the filming, to the actors, to paying levies to the local authorities, to making sure there is enough money to make the movie. That is why we talk about the producer and producer. But obviously, to produce a movie, you will need a whole lot of other people that are contributing in various ways. The location, you have to speak to the municipality, you must adhere to the bylaws. If you want to shoot, for example, at a state in a department or something like that, or the Robben Island you want to shoot, there's somebody that has to negotiate the rights and access, and government may say you may pay us this and so forth. So that's why we talk about the requirements of a producer. So because the producer is the one who oversees all of those, including buying the uniform, if there's a uniform or a costume, and hiring those people who design the costume. That's the work of the producer. And that's why this article referred to the required competencies and exceptional cases in terms of what are the requirements of the thing. So I don't want to go through all of those requirements. There are about eight of them, but I might just maybe take reference to maybe Article 8, which says sub-articles 6 and 7 of this article applying compliance with the European Union rules on state aid law applicable in the field of cinema and audiovisual, and in particular set out in the communication from the Committee on State Aid for Films and Other Visual Works, published in the Official Journal of the European Union. And the reason I'm reading this one in particular is because France is part of the European Union. So there are certain conditions that France has to fulfill within the European Union before. So in other words, we have to deal with other European conditions that can preclude or inhibit or restrict France working with us. So that is why that sub-article is very important, in the sense that within the European Union itself, and France will have done those work, there is nothing that France has signed off to within the European Union that will prohibit. In South Africa, we are a member of SADC, but as we understand, SADC is not as integrated, perhaps on an economic level and financial level and regularity, certain regularities that requires us to do that. But obviously, we take this agreement through our lawyers, the state law advisors, and the Justice Department as well, just to make sure that we ourselves as well, we do not violate any of our international obligations, either be SADC, AU, UN, or also we also don't violate any of our domestic laws. So that article, for me, I think it was very important just to read it to explain further why these competencies and requirement for the producers are very, very, very important, which means it allows the South African producer working with the French producer to raise funds even outside of France, I mean, within the European Union, or to get funding from the European Union, not only from France, but the European Union, in support of this agreement. Thank you. Maybe Article 5 deals with the financial contribution. Just to take one, the proportion of the respective financial contribution of the co-producers of each party for the co-production of the audiovisual work may vary from 20% to 80% of the total co-production budget. The competent authorities of the party may, in exceptional cases, in agreement between them, accept that the amount of the financial contribution referred to in sub-article 1 may vary from 10 to 90%. So this is actually, this deals with the financial contribution. As I spoke earlier about a producer is somebody who raises funds. Say, for example, the budget needs the film, producing a film is very expensive. Say a film wants 100 million rand to produce. It might be possible that South Africa can raise 70 million rand and France only raised 30 million rand. The producer from France only raised that 30 million rand. So that it deals with those nitty-gritties. And then, of course, the producers will then agree among themselves. But or France can raise 80% of the cost, and South Africa is only able to raise 20% of the cost. So it deals with those financial contribution that you do not necessarily have limitations in terms of who's putting what money and who's not putting that money. So that it should not be that somebody's putting 90% of the fund, and the other one must also maybe raise a certain amount of money to make the film a reality, because the idea is to support film development in both countries, is to promote tourism, is also to promote cultural diplomacy, is also to promote the two countries as cinema destinations. So those are the financial issues that this article deals with. So the other one is the question of ownership. Again, it talks about the co-producer as being the owners of the work that is being produced, and I've already explained why they will say the producer owns the work, but so I won't go into that. But this deals with the ownership is the ownership in terms of the co-produced film that will be produced arriving out of this co-production treaty.
And obviously, different people who put pay money will have certain rights that are accorded to them by the producer in terms of the agreement that they will have signed, and whoever has was who and who raised the money. But normally, the producer owned the product of the work. But these things are negotiated on an individual basis. The one who wrote the film will still have the owner, will be the owner in terms of the script, but the overall relate to the producer. In terms of movement and persons, Article number 7 deals with the movement of persons and goods. It also deals with, obviously, this movement of person and good will have to take cognizance of the import and export and the regulatory framework that governs the movement of goods and people in respective countries. For example, I mean, if we have to have an actor that need to come to South Africa as part of the co-production, that will be processed through the proper channels. He's coming here for a short time for work, then he will be given the necessary documentation by Home Affairs to be here to shoot that movie for a particular period. If there are other equipment that need to be exported to South Africa, the producer will then negotiate with the Department of Home Affairs, obviously working with our NAVF, to make sure that those equipment, that those that are here for that purpose only get sent back. And if there are any levies or any import duties that need to be paid, those things are paid to the relevant authorities. And the last one says each party shall endeavor, in accordance with the aforementioned laws and regulations, to facilitate the movement and residence in this country of the artistic and technical staff involved in the work of the cinematograph and audiovisual production. Again, a movie needs too many people to produce. You've got a sound engineer, you've got an editor, there are just too many people in a movie. You've got extras, you've got actors, the people who are going to do the editing, the script writers, all of those things. It talks about how these people are going to be moving, how are they going to be accorded a status, and how they are going to be facilitated to move. Because a co-production film will probably be shot in both countries, and then we need to move people around. But those are done in accordance with our own immigration laws and so forth, and other import and export duties that South Africa, that of our national interest. So it is so if they are coming to South Africa, they will be processed according to our national laws. If they are going to France, they will be processed according to the French laws. The Article 8 is the assessment. This, of course, deals with it deals with, as I've spoken before, the purpose of checking whether the balance has been achieved. The competent authorities shall draw up a summary of all the means of support and funding, for example. It deals with how then do we assess the success, the failure, and how then do we intervene to ensure that the cinematographic, this agreement becomes a living agreement. As I said before, that the one that was signed in 2024 has realized a number of film production. So this deals with issues like that. The balance, we talk about the joint committee, for example, in the assessment. The NAVF has a joint committee that they've created. France also has a joint committee. I already spoken about the meetings of the two joint committees earlier to say they met about a month ago, and they are meeting again next month, where these two joint committees are going to try and facilitate the work that needs to happen. So this assessment, and when it talks about the joint committees, it talks about these two committees, and their critical role is to ensure that the producers on both sides are connected. The producers are on both sides. They know about this film treaty. So there's a lot also that goes into marketing and promotion of this film treaty. For example, for South Africa, participate in the Cannes Film Festival. We were there this year. France also do come to our film festival, the Durban Film Mart as well. And they also, at various intervals, our embassies can also show the South African film in France. So this goes into that kind of work where the various teams work together to ensure that this work is achieved. The credit, the last, maybe the Article 9 that deal with credit, credit, I'm sure all of us, we have seen a movie. When the movie ends, you've got a long list of names that goes up. Those are credits. And all of those people, that names goes up. You will see sometimes when the department has funded a movie, through the NAVF, there will be the NAVF logo there, or there will be TTIC logo there. All of those people will have contributed in one way or the other in terms of the realization of that movie. So this issue of credit talks about who need to be given credit for what and what have they done. So the article number 10 that talks about co-production with other countries, as I alluded before, that the one that we signed in 2010 was very restrictive. It only talks about film produced for the cinema. But it was also very restrictive in terms of the number of people, the other people that we can work with, which were not French residents or permanent residents or citizens in South Africa. So this one also allow us to enter into co-production treaties with other countries using the very same agreement. For example, there are only three articles in here, and they talk about the competent authorities, and I've already spoken about the competent authorities. In this case, the National Film Video Foundation, we have given them that authority to deal with this film, the film treaties, may by mutual agreement accept that the cinematographic or audiovisual work covered by this agreement may be co-produced with one or more producers from a state with which either party has signed a cinematographic or audiovisual co-production agreement. Say, for example, we have an agreement with Nigeria, for example. And the story that is being told has got a Nigerian connection, for example. And we also need to go and shoot that part of the story in Nigeria. And because we have an agreement with Nigeria on the film, say South Africa has, we will then be able to partner with Nigeria, with the competent authorities in Nigeria, or a producer from Nigeria, or a funder from Nigeria, to come in and then be responsible for certain aspects of that film, of the film that we are producing with France. So whereas before, if we had a story that talks to South Africa and France, but it touches another country, for example, we would not have been able to produce. There will have been restriction. Let me not say they have not been able, but there will have been restrictions in terms of whether that movie could be made. And I think this co-production with other countries is a very important article that allows us to work together with other state parties or other countries that we might have signed the co-production treaties. That makes it even much more possible in terms of the funding, but also to complete the story. Because if the story touches other people, but they cannot be part of the story, that might distort the story somewhat. So that becomes a very important article in terms of how. And this is exactly one of the reasons why, in terms of this article, why we have to redo to sign this new article, because the old one was not serving us very well in this modern world. You've got Article 11, Joint Committee. I've already spoken about the Joint Committee, that they are meeting, and they will meet every 2 years. Alternatively, the Republic of South Africa and France, these things happen. but also they are having this meeting on webinars online, and they don't necessarily have to wait for 2 years, you know, but they can meet whenever they feel there is a need to work, to meet, especially at the beginning now, it's very, very important. Yes. So I'm going to conclude now. The entry into force and the amendment, the agreement came into force on the 3rd of June 2023 after ratification by the two parliaments, the South African Parliament and the French Parliament. So it came into force on the 3rd of June, meaning that it is now a living legal document. Anybody can use it. And the other article that is the settlement of disputes. It allows how disputes should be settled, you know, through amicable negotiation, direct consultation, and negotiation between the parties. So this is that. But in conclusion, honourable members, is that the spin-off of this interaction that we are having with France is really so that South African location and crews can also be used in international production. You know, and it, you know, so that's very important. And we must bear in mind that the co-produced content under the treaties benefit the country in terms of promoting South Africa's culture locally, internationally, create jobs for South Africans, expose South African talent to international standard production, expose South African content to international markets, contribute to our social cohesion, and promote local languages and local locations in South Africa as well. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there any additions? Any additions?
Chairperson, not at this stage. If there are questions, perhaps we will come in at that point. In as far as this presentation is concerned, we have concluded, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you very much. I think now let's then move for clarities and questions from the members of the committee. I believe the DM is also still here. I'm inviting for clarities, questions. We have a comprehensive presentation outlining the agreement between South Africa and France in terms of the Film Treaty. Yes, and then we'll then wait for questions. Any questions? For the first time. Deputy Minister, do we have any input?
No, Chair, no. I'm just laughing when you say for the first time. No, I don't have any questions. Thanks, Chair. And just to say to Chair, I will be here until the end of the meeting.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Thank you very much. I know you are always full-time available. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Okay, thank you very much. I believe there are no questions, no clarities. The presentation was very detailed in terms of the articles, outlining each and every articles, the 14 articles, which we believe that we are all understanding as to how this agreement will be unfolding. I think let's then move to the next part of the... Anything from the department? before we go to have a proposal that we endorse or agree on the agreement. Anything further?
Nothing from us, Chair. Nothing from us. Remember, Chair, for us, this was for information purposes. And we're quite happy that the members of the select committee have got this information. They can feel free anytime, whether it's not on this meeting, if for some reason there's something that they want clarity on, they can write to us and we can give that clarity. So we are available. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much. If I understand, the agreement is being signed, and this is for information for the select committee.
Yes, Chair, it has been signed. It was signed in September last year.
Thank you very much. All right. Then I believe that we are done with this item. Noltando, are there any other item?
Yes, Chair, there's a second presentation on the UNESCO Convention.
Okay. All right. Is it necessary that we have to stay all of us for the next presentation?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Can we then move to the next presentation? You're welcome for the next presentation.
Acting DG, I'm handing over to you.
Thank you, DM. Good morning once again, Chairperson and members. As I had indicated earlier on, the DDG for Heritage would cover this presentation. Allow me not then to waste time, Chairperson, and just hand over to him to take you through the presentation. DDG Ndima.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ADG. And let me also greet the Honorable Chairperson of the Select Committee. Let me, and the Honorable Members of the Select Committee, our Deputy Minister, who is leading us here today, and the advisor to the Minister also present today. Let me then just proceed with the presentation. Just to start by indicating that the main purpose of this presentation is to share with Parliament our objective to ratify the 2003 UNESCO Convention on Safeguarding Intangible Cultural Heritage. Now, if I go to the summary, I want to indicate that the convention provides for safeguarding, preservation, and promotion of intangible cultural heritage. And the question could be, what do we refer to when we talk about the intangible cultural heritage? This refers to practices, representations, expressions, knowledge, skills, as well as instruments, objects, artifacts, and cultural spaces associated with communities, groups, and individuals and recognized as part of their cultural heritage. This kind of heritage is transmitted from generation to generation. It is constantly being created and recreated by communities and groups in response to their environment, their interaction with nature and their history. It also provides them with a sense of identity and continuity. And part of the reason for the safeguarding of intangible cultural heritage is the realization that a significant part of it is under threat of deterioration, disappearance, and extinction. So why is it necessary for us to ratify this convention? So this convention obligates state parties to identify, define, devise appropriate measures for its preservation so that it is not obliterated. In fact, it has been saved from total obliteration from colonialism and imperialism. It also encourages countries to adopt legal, technical, administrative, and financial measures to safeguard and promote ICH. This convention also promotes regional, continental, and international cooperation. Key features of the convention are that state parties must keep an updated representative list of ICH of humanity, and where applicable, a list of intangible cultural heritage in need of urgent safeguarding. Now, coming to the discussion, we're saying here intangible cultural heritage has got the potential to contribute to social cohesion and nation building on the social front, and stimulating tourism development, creating job opportunities, and enhancing investment climate on the economic front. Some aspects of ICH, whether one talks of performances, rituals, rites of passage, to name but a few, take a place in a communal context. A lot of collaboration and cooperation is essential. Bonds and networks are forged. These bonds and networks contribute to social capital and become an important reference point for individuals and groups. So the convention is explicit that its implementation should take place in the context of participation by communities, groups, and non-governmental organizations. And of course, some of the advantages that will accrue to to South Africa on ratification to the convention is that the country will be party to the sharing of international expertise and best practice, intensify regional cooperation and integration on cultural matters. We share borders with 6 countries, for instance, Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, Mozambique, Namibia, and Zimbabwe. So we share a lot of culture and heritage with these countries, whether you are talking about languages, music, dance, and other cultural forms. So this particular convention, once we have ratified this convention, we will have much more authority to go out there, see what kind of joint programs we can have with these countries, because there's been a lot of cultural interpenetration between South Africa and these countries. Convention provides for countries to develop joint lists, such as representative list of ICH of humanity, list of ICH in need of agents of guarding, as well as bilateral cooperation between countries. Our department will use this convention to intensify regional and continental integration on arts, culture, and heritage. But also, Honorable Chairperson, it will also put us in the same position that we as South Africans and as a continent, we identify kind of ICH that stands out in the world. I mean, in 2018, just to make an example, Honorable Chairperson and Deputy Minister, Jamaica was able to enlist reggae music as one of their intangible cultural heritage property, which is unique, which is their unique contribution to the world. If you talk about reggae, the first thing that comes to mind is Jamaica, and they have put this as one of their intangible cultural heritage property. Continuing with our discussion, we're saying globalization presents unique challenges to ICH. In most instances, it increases its marginalization with the cosmopolitanism that happens through globalization. Sometimes we end up forgetting what is original, what is ours, what is part of our identity. Some cultural forms, such as storytelling skills, techniques, and performances, are on the verge of extinction. It becomes very much important to document those, to preserve that for posterity. So the convention prescribes certain measures for their safeguarding, such as the requirements for national government to identify and define as ICH within its territory. South Africa, with its cultural diversity, it has so much to offer to the world. It also requires state parties to develop national inventories as well as national policies, which, for instance, in South Africa, we already have a policy on intangible cultural heritage. Now, implementation plan. This will require close collaboration with other national departments that do work pertaining to intangible cultural heritage. Departments such as Department of Science and Technology, Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Department of Health, because they also deal with matters of they deal with matters of national framework policy on traditional medicine, science and technology, they deal with IKS, Indigenous Knowledge System, and of course, traditional affairs and on matters of traditional governance. So the provincial and local spheres of government have also implemented regulations and bylaws to deal with aspects of ICH. So there's a need for that dialogue and alignment of these initiatives. Now, financial implications. Honorable Chair, I don't want to scare the Select Committee if I then just show this slide. It doesn't mean that this is the money that we should have, but when we were doing this particular exercise, we had to then look at the indicative figures that would allow this country to be able to implement this. It doesn't mean that that's the money that is required. So we have developed a national policy on living heritage that supports the domestication of the convention once it is ratified by South Africa. We're saying that the above table present an indicative costing related to the implementation of the national policy over a three-year period, and that the costing exercise was done a few years back and does not contain costs per unit. These are estimated costs to be incurred by the entire sector that deals with safeguarding of intangible cultural heritage during implementation. So the department will use its existing financial resources from National Treasury, as well as current staff component. And the work is included in the mandates and the APP of its relevant public entities. Now, one would want to know, if you are looking at these kinds of figures, what will this money go to, or where will this money be deployed? So the key cost drivers include research. You need to have research. Audit of intangible cultural heritage throughout the country. You need to know what you are talking about. Where are these practices existing in our cities, in our urban spaces, in our peri-urban spaces, in our rural spaces, and largely rural areas where this has been preserved for a very long time. And then you would then have to include the intangible cultural heritage in danger of disappearing, because this it's very delicate in a sense that it has actually been kept largely in our oratory, in our oral tradition. There are living human treasures out there, people who are knowledge holders in this kind of heritage, and unfortunately they are exiting the space of Earth. And it becomes important that we document this kind of knowledge before they pass on. An inventory of ICH and IKS projects to document, publish, and disseminate ICH, because it's one thing to document, it's one thing to preserve, but if there's no access to it, it doesn't help anyone. So that's why it becomes very much important that there are publication and promotion of books on work of living human treasures and the work of the National ICH Authentication Panel. As required by the policy, our minister appointed a National ICH Authentication Panel of experts to advise, inform, and guide the implementation of a coordinated approach on the audit, the inventory, and ICH and IKS documentation and promotion projects to be implemented by the National Heritage Council, the South African Heritage Resources Agency. Now, to reduce cost and duplication, the panel is also guiding partnerships with key partners such as the departments that I've just spoken about, traditional affairs, science and innovation, higher education, tourism, trade and industry, research institutions, Business at South Africa and SABC. Now, risk mitigation. What are the risks in this space of heritage, which is intangible? Exploitation of indigenous knowledge systems of communities by companies for profit is a large risk. We know we have a history in this country, we have the history in the continent where there's a case, for instance, of Solomon Linda, who is popularly known for the song Imbube. Out of that song, he got some few shillings, but the product that got translated into music in the US, translated into films, it just amassed billions of rands, whilst Linda himself dying a pauper. Now, there is this danger here. So the Protection, Promotion, Development, and Management of Indigenous Knowledge Act 2019 should be one of those things that mitigate against this. It was also raised by the Department of Forestry, Fisheries, and Environment, DFFE, that there is inadequate participation of indigenous communities in policy discussion pertaining to the protection and promotion of the rights of indigenous communities as custodians of indigenous knowledge system. Now, how do we mitigate this? What are they putting forward as a mitigation measure? To mitigate against this, DFFE included representatives of indigenous communities on the National Bioprospecting Forum. That's what is important. And even this convention is very emphatic on the fact that you need to work with local communities. You need to work with knowledge holders. You need to find ways of protecting this particular heritage together with knowledge holders. What are the implications for vulnerable groups? It's very important, Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members of the Committee, to indicate that South Africa's ICH, it thrives in the rural areas, as I've said before, and largely practiced by previously marginalized groups. So this convention presents an opportunity for government to redress colonial and apartheid legacies of neglect and obliteration. The implementation of measures in the convention will constructively contribute to the deepening of cultural diversity, social cohesion, and nation building in the country. Now, which departments had been consulted as we were just in the process of championing this cause of ratification? Consultations were held with a range of stakeholders, including civil society, statutory institutions, other government departments, and practitioners in the field of ICH. First National Consultative Workshop, where over 200 representatives of the sector, they were unanimous that the department should proceed to accede to the convention, that the government should move faster in the safeguarding, preservation, and promotion of ICH, because this is kind of heritage is under threat of disappearance and marginalization. So we need not waste time to join the world community, to learn from the world community how countries like China, Japan, who are having a competitive edge in this space, are protecting and promoting this kind of intangible cultural heritage. And we've gone further to look at legal opinions of consistency with domestic and international law and obligations. And we have obtained legal opinion from the state law advisors of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, and the Department of International Relations and Cooperation that by ratifying this convention, we will not be in contravention of any of the domestic laws. Now, what's the current status? The ratification of the convention has been approved by cabinet. It has been submitted to the two houses of parliament. It's been shared with the portfolio of sport arts, portfolio committee on sport, arts and culture, and was adopted. Today, it is being shared with the select committee on education and technology, sport, arts and culture. Then it will be discussed and hopefully approved by parliament, after which it will be deposited with UNESCO. So what is the recommendation today, Honorable Chairperson? We are requesting the Select Committee on Education and Technology, Sport, Arts and Culture to support the submission of this convention to UNESCO for ratification. I think I've come to an end of the presentation, Honorable Chairperson and Deputy Minister, and honorable members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have then come to the end of the presentation, and we will then invite clarities, questions for clarities, and also questions, inputs on the presentation. We will then allow that time for any inputs. Are there any inputs? Okay. It seems that the presentation was very detailed, and I think in terms of the recommendations, we at the last two slides, in terms of the state and also the status quo of the presentation and also the recommendations. Can you just, the last two slides, that we just confirm the two last two slides as to, in terms of the status quo and the recommendations. Current status, yes. The current status, that we have the outline of the current status, and then the recommendations. Can we have the recommendations?
Does the chair want me to come back?
Yeah, just the recommendations.
Yes. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of the Committee. All that we are recommending, the current status is just to indicate that it has been approved by Cabinet, it has been submitted to the Houses of Parliament, also we've presented at the Portfolio Committee on Sport, Arts and Culture, and it adopted it. And now today we are here to the Select Committee on Education and Technology, Sport, Arts and Culture. And immediately after that, it will then be discussed by Parliament. And from there, it will then go to UNESCO. Then all that we are asking for, Honorable Chair, is for the Select Committee to support our submission of this convention to UNESCO for ratification. That's what we are asking for, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we get a proposal for support? Can we get a proposal in a seconder? Honorable members?
Sorry, Chair.
Yes, we want a proposal for supporting the first to support in a second. Yes, you're welcome.
It's Nolutando.
Yes, Nolutando.
Just to indicate that the The convention has not been formally referred to the committee as yet. So for now, the committee is just receiving the briefing from the department. Once the convention has been formally referred, then that's only when the committee will be reporting to the House recommending the support for the convention.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Notando. So then can we then say that we have received the presentation and then we will wait for the further developments and then the committee then to give its support as explained. Can we take it from that note?
Yes, Chair, we can do that. We take note of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nkosi. Yeah, then we're done. Any further points, Notano?
Yes, Chair, we've got 3 sets of minutes to adopt.
Okay. Okay, then thank you very much. Then we then will step down from the presentations and then thank firstly the Deputy Minister for her commitment. It's a real commitment. We are greatly appreciating that. And also thank the DGs and acting DG and the DDG for the presentations. And then we'll then step down from that part of the meeting. Then we'll then go to the minutes of the meeting. Is the chairperson still here? I think it'll just be proper if he can handle the minutes.
Thank you so much, Chair. Whilst the chair is coming in, just to thank the select committee for giving us audience. And we can leave the meeting now. We will see you when you invite us again. Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much, Deputy Minister. Greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, DM and members. We out.
Thank you very much. Chairperson? Okay, let me then go through the minutes of Wednesday, the 20th of September, Select Committee, Education and Technology, Arts and Culture. Can we move on? We look for corrections on the minutes. Okay, we move on with the minutes. Okay. This meeting adjourned at 12:20, which is the meeting of the 20th of September. Any corrections in the minutes? Any proposal for the adoption of the minutes?
Dongeni, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Dongeni. Seconder?
Nkosi, second, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nkosi. Next set of minutes. Can move on with the minutes. Okay. This meeting also adjourned at 12:20. This meeting was a meeting of the 7th of June, 2023. Any corrections on the minutes? Any proposal for the adoption of the minutes?
Chair, it's because we move for the adoption of the minutes. Honorable,
Thank you, Honorable Nkosi. Seconder?
Baha seconds, Chair.
Honorable Baha, thank you very much. Altando, we only have those two sets.
There's a last set, Chair.
Thank you very much. Then I believe we then had come to the end of our...
There's one more set, Chair. The last okay. one.
The last one. Thank you very much. Okay, can we... The last set of minutes. Can we fly it? Colonel Tando? The last set of minutes. I can't see it on my side.
They're on the screen, Chair.
I can't see on my side. Okay, if the other members, because it's not, I can't see, it's nothing on my side.
We don't see it either, Chairperson.
No, there's nothing, Chair. It's blank here.
Yes, it's blank, yes.
All right, let me stop sharing and share them again, sir.
Yes, please. There we are. Can move on. Okay, we move on. Okay, this meeting was then adjourned on the agenda 12:15. Any clarities, questions for clarity? Corrections on the minutes? Any proposal for adoption of the minutes?
Don't get any, Chair.
Honorable Dongeni, thank you. Seconder? Honorable Christians, are you agreeing with the minutes?
I am, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Then we adopt the set of minutes. Okay, then we have come then to the end of our meeting. Let me use this opportunity to thank all the members for today's meeting, and also for having a very successful meeting in receiving presentations. On that note, to that the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Bye, Danke, and Nkosi.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, Dangi Chair.
Recording stopped.